Ahoy! You're listening to Diffuse Tap with Kenny Estes and Isla Creme. Today we're chinwagging with Manu Chowdhury, founder of Definity, about all things AI in crypto. Why is AI so interesting in this asset class? How do institutions vet an AI algorithm before using it? And what technical challenges keep algo crypto trading from mass adoption? Enjoy. All right, everybody. Welcome back, as always. Hope you enjoyed your conversations. And the speaker is here, so that's always a relief. For those of you who are new, here's what you can expect. This is a weekly event, Diffuse Tap is. This is our 114th weekly event, which is crazy. Say it every time, but it's still crazy to think about. We're going to briefly talk about this event, why we do it, and how it works. And then we're going to talk about Diffuse, why we do the event. And then we are going to do a 15-minute fireside chat with Manu Chowdhury, followed by two more rounds of breakout rooms, kind of like you just experienced. The reason is because this is predominantly a networking event. It's a chance for you to meet alternative investors from all over the world in a rapid fire speed dating, I guess, style. But we do want you to learn something as well. So hence the insights from people like our expert Manu talking about AI. And as a reminder, there are in-person versions of this. We actually changed the date since last week on this. So now in Chicago on August 17th, previously it was the 18th, but it is now the 17th. We're doing an in-person one, so feel free to join us for that if you're in that neck of the woods. Why do we do this? Well, if Diffuse is a fund complex, so we have two funds running right now. One's a market-neutral DeFi fund, and the other one is an index fund that we're IPOing. We use this event as an opportunity to learn about new investing strategies, potentially turn them into funds at some point in the future. And then also just meet investors and just get a better feel for or keep our finger on the pulse. So that's why we do this. Probably the same reason you do. But with that said, Manu, I am terrible with introductions. Would you mind unmuting yourself and introducing yourself and what you're up to over at Definity?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Kenny. So my name is Manu Chowdhury. I'm the CEO of DMA Link and the co-founder of Definity Markets. Effectively, DMA Link is a institutional platform for principally banks, but also so hedge funds to trade precious metals and FX. And Definity Markets is effectively a institutional platform for cryptocurrencies and eventually wholesale central bank digital currencies, not retail. Not a big fan of those. Prior to joining the world of fintech and leaving TradFi, I spent 17 and a half years working in cross-asset derivative sales back in the good old days before CVA of inflation and interest rates, and more recently FX and commodities derivatives for Lloyd's and Barclays Investment Bank as well. Been a big fan of tech pretty much my entire career, and my life changed in 2018 when I discovered what AI truly was.
Amazing. We're going to toss you right in the deep end after this. So maybe as a starting point, just because data and availability of data is a bit complicated when it comes to the crypto universe, what does the data landscape look like right now in crypto? What's available? What's not available? What's paid? What's free? What do you make yourself? How does it work?
So it's very fragmented. It's not like TradFi where you have awesome data available, you know, all the time. It's very difficult to get good quality data. Having said that, one of the big differences that I see between TradFi and between, I guess, crypto is there's no such thing as on-chain analytics or on-chain data for traditional markets. You do a trade in equities, you do a trade in fixed income. Yes, there's a transaction on exchange, which will be reported either to the regulator or submitted to a repository within 48 hours. You don't get it, not necessarily in real time, but in nearly real time like you do with digital assets. So that's one of the big differences. I think in terms of where the data set is, it's not that different to FX back in the 90s. You know, you've got big bid offer spreads. You've got a lot of fragmentation in terms of geographic and also pricing. And there are almost a billion venues that you can trade on, which is again, end one way, which is you're going to see huge amounts of M&A. You're going to see mergers. And that's how this is going to, I think, move forward. But to give you a bit of a order of magnitude difference in terms of our FX platform, what we basically have is, from a data perspective, we have anywhere between 10,000 and 50,000 pricing updates per currency pair per second. We have 63 currency pairs plus gold and silver. That is a huge amount of data, huge amount of data. And that is many multiples of what is available in the world of crypto as a market, full stop, let alone one venue. So I think there's a lot to do between now and really getting to the point where we can maximize the availability of data. But even with what we have, there's a lot of very smart techniques you can use to exploit this and take advantage.
Okay, let's go there. So this is a good framing question for Mr. Sorensen. I hear AI and I immediately replace it with data scrubbing because that seems to be the vast majority of AI is getting clean data. And then the actual AI is relatively straightforward on top of that once we have good data. So in your words, what is AI? Where do you focus on and how is that distinct from just kind of the data gathering piece?
Yeah. Okay. Look, so that's a really, really valid point. Everyone uses AI. Every time I look at LinkedIn or Instagram or Telegram, everyone's developed a new amazing AI. The reality is most of it is just automation. It's not AI. So let me define my definition of AI. So my definition of AI is basically the transition from humans telling computers how to act to computers learning how to act without being told. That is what I believe true AI is. And that is what we use. In terms of the data scrubbing, it depends on what you use. So we are fortunate enough that we use the latest evolution of machine learning, which is called deep learning, which is amazing for looking at very rich data sets, but it's also amazingly good at looking at very disparate, fractured data sets as well. So it's you don't necessarily need to do as much scrubbing. And of course, the more you mess with the data, the more you start structuring it, or the more you start defining parameters, the more of your human biases you basically put onto that data set, and the outcomes will be slightly jaundiced, I think.
Amazing. Question kind of as a follow-up to that. If you're looking at kind of what's possible with AI today versus, let's say, 6 months or a year ago, especially maybe exploring a little bit into the DeFi space of things, is that something that you have a view on? Data on FX pairs might be a bit easier to get by than data in DeFi protocols. What's your thinking around that kind of unique data sets that might be or may not be available?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's two things here, right? So one is getting access to as clean as possible data, and the other is getting proprietary data. But above and beyond both those, if you want to make money out of them, you've got to be able to execute trades. So you need to understand quite a lot about the dynamics of liquidity, how that changes, how that evolves over the course of a day. There's a lot of factors in terms of taking the data set, creating something that gives you a signal, and then monetization. They're three separate vectors within that, I guess that Venn diagram. In terms of our view of data, look, as the market evolves, the granularity of the data set becomes bigger, which means you get better data. But you have to be careful with data. More data isn't necessarily a great thing, because what it does is it shortens the predictive timeline. So I'll give you, for instance, we did an experiment and we took end-of-day data, which quite frankly is pretty useless, and we said, okay, let's use one target vector. Let's use Bitcoin, for instance. Let's then add a whole bunch of context vectors, which we did. We had 126, such as the 10-year yield, the 2-10 spread, the NASDAQ, the S&P, the Eurostox, and so on and so forth, gold, silver. And we threw that raw data at the AI agents, and it basically came back and it gave us a graded response of anomalies. And we built this essentially to help a lot of the banks that we're speaking to get their head around the crypto market, just because it's so much more volatile than the traditional markets. And what's interesting about this is that we created a model that 73.3% of the time accurately predicted volatility events 24 hours before they happened. Now, that's remarkable because it was using end-of-day data. If you shorten that to, let's say, hourly data, it becomes more accurate, but the prediction or the predictive window decreases to 60 minutes. More data is great, but it depends on what you're trying to achieve. You know, if you're a high frequency trader, then yeah, absolutely. You know, look at tick data, you can make predictions out 100 milliseconds into the future. If you're a macro trader, you probably want daily or weekly forecasts. So it kind of depends on what you're trying to achieve.
Okay. So your strategies then, and this is picking up a question from, I think, Aaron Winkler. So what is the actual core strategy? You get the data, you're doing the predictive, are you market making around those kind of the prices you predict? Are you liquidity removing? What is the actual data?
So Kenny, this is the funny thing. So we're not hedge fund traders. You know, we're basically sales and trading guys. You know, we worked in markets our entire careers, but we're not running strategies or money. What's interesting about this is that we accidentally created a proprietary strategy, didn't intend to. It was just when I gave it to my friends who are portfolio managers, they were trading options and saying, this is amazing. It's got like a 4.2 Sharpe ratio, to which I said, well, that's not really what it's for, guys. It's meant to give you a risk matrix. And actually what I'll do is I'll post a link in the Telegram chat for anyone who wants free access to have a look at it. And any feedback is very welcome. But effectively, what has happened is that we have accidentally created a strategy that generates alpha.
Fascinating. Do you want to talk a little bit maybe to more around how your models work? Jared has a question for you. Are you training predictive model algos in real time? How does the normalization impact accuracy? Just some more details, I guess, more technical on your Azure algorithm.
Okay, so there's a couple of things to, I guess, explain here. So effectively, the anomaly detector I'm talking about is not a predictive model in inverted commas. Effectively, all it does is, if you imagine a data set, you tend to have some kind of clustering around a mean. All this does is it uses a technique called isolation forest. And just for reference, Google uses random forest when they train their AI agents. And what it does is it looks for the distance between that clustering and the outliers, and it gives you a score. The further that data set is, or that pointer data is away from the cluster, the more likely it was created by a cause that was radically different to the rest of the data. And that is basically what the anomaly score is. And it gives you a percentage weighting. It will say, for instance, there's a 65% chance that Bitcoin will have a volatility event, i.e. it will move up or down. So it's non-directional. It's just saying there'll be a move in volatility, which is why, again, trading it with options is such a pure way of executing a trade. When it comes to trading algos, okay, there's several different algo models we're actually building. We're building a whole bunch of market making algos, which are effectively market neutral. They don't really generate alpha. We've also got some alpha generation algos, and we have execution algos as well. So they're the three cohorts that we're playing with. We use different methodologies. So effectively, when I say AI, we have probably several dozen AI agents, all trained in slightly different ways. And one of the big distinctions I want to make about the way we work and how we train this, without giving away too much of the secret sauce, is most models working with artificial intelligence rely on effectively competitive methodologies. So, for instance, Darwinian evolution. We don't use that because we've realized that since the 1990s, Darwinian evolution doesn't really work very well. And the reason it doesn't work is effectively in the 90s, we had this thing called the Human Genome Project. It was thought one gene equaled one protein. Unfortunately, humans have 24,000 genes and 130,000 proteins. So how does that work? Well, the environment expresses those sequence of genes. So what we found is that actually having them working rather than against each other, working collaboratively to see how we can tweak the cohort to get the most optimal predictive outcome is kind of how we work. Hopefully I answered that question. Okay.
I think so. And Brent actually has a follow-on question. We'll pick it up here. So you accidentally found out the prop trading algos. So kudos to you. And hopefully those are being pretty lucrative for you. But that's not the main goal. You're not looking to, in most cases, to generate alpha or returns. It feels like this is more you're predicting volatility and then the risk around that. Is that correct?
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And then
so the objective was when we spoke to banks, they were jumping up and down saying, look, we wanted to do this. Yeah. Our risk guys won't let us trade because we need to understand what drives this. So when we built this, we've actually got all 126 vectors. So if you want to look at how much of that 70% score is on-chain data, we can tell you specifically what on-chain data was, moving to exchanges from exchanges, how much of it was related to precious metals, to equities. Because look, I'm not a big fan of black box models, maybe because I'm not a tech guy, I'm a sales and trading guy. I want to know exactly what the constituents are. So it was purely a risk management strategy, basically. It just so happens you can make money out of it.
Okay, I'll do a quick knock-on question then there, because you talked about your institutional clients. When they're looking at your algos, how do they underwrite them? What does that process look like? What are the key things that they want exposed to them?
So effectively, I guess there's two demographics of clients that we have. So obviously on the digital asset side, we have a small cohort of clients that use our market making algos. And the reason, or the big difference, in fact, it's probably worth explaining what the big difference is between regular algos and our algos. So, and again, with my TradFi hat on, you know, we refer to them typically as quant models, basically. But fundamentally, what happens with these models is that when the dynamics of a market change or there's a fundamental shift in the structure of a market, they stop working either full stop or they stop working as efficiently. And effectively, what we have done is we've basically used a bunch of AI agents to dynamically change those algos. So effectively, in terms of retraining the algos and retraining the AIs, it used to take 3 months. We then got that down to a month and then a week. Now we're down to a day. We should be down to about an hour by the end of the year. So it won't be real time, but it'll be as dynamic as we can have. So that's the big fundamental difference. In terms of I guess the users, typically we have a couple of crypto projects that use our market making algos for their tokens. On the traditional side, we have a couple of fund managers that use our execution algos for effectively transacting less liquid currency pairs. So kind of, you know, CE3, Czech, Polish, MEX, Rand, and sometimes the Scandis as well.
Maybe one question that popped up here was more around AI and ethics. In crypto, it might be a little bit less socially oriented, but maybe thinking of it more from a risk discovery and risk exploitation perspective, because you have insights on a lot of different things that most people don't even can't see because they don't have access to that data and that kind of bird's eye view that you have. And what are your thoughts on AI ethics in crypto?
So look, I think if we go back to the fundamental founding tenet of the businesses that I run was to try and create more open, more accessible financial markets, be it FX, be it precious metals, be it crypto. So, we're big fans of transparency, we're big fans of openness. And this is why we effectively have given away a lot of these tools effectively to our token holders, essentially, so they can have a look at this, have a very unique view on the market. I think in terms of really, I think the ethics is really about distribution. So how is that information or how are those outcomes being distributed? If they're being given away, I think there's no real issue with it because you're trying to, I guess, within either your ecosystem or within the crypto community, full stop, increase the level of understanding. That's cool. Obviously, I've got to put my financial hat on because my CFO will obviously get very upset because we need to generate P&L. Obviously, we have stratification. So yes, our basic one is available pretty much for free. We obviously have ones that are far more accurate and far better, which we principally pitch to Insti clients, which we charge a fee for. So, would I want to give away my hourly signals for free? Probably not. Is it ethical to do that? I think it probably is because we're giving away the daily signals for free.
Okay. Changing topics a smidgen. Obviously, do a lot of AI. There's a lot of a paradigm shift, right? Now all of a sudden your signals are invalid. For people that are vetting from the outside looking in an AI type strategy, what are the red flags for them? Like an AI charlatan, like overfitting, like how can somebody who's not necessarily deep in the weeds come in and try to get a feel for whether this thing is legit or it's just a bunch of fluff?
So look, I think it's really about the level of accuracy. I think I've seen a lot of models that kind of have 90%+ accuracy, which is amazing. And then when you actually deploy them, they're pretty horrific. So look, I think the best way is the Pepsi challenge. Get access to signals, watch them for a month or two and see how they work real time. Because look, I can take the outcome of what we have and I can run a regression analysis and it'll look amazing. But it's pretty meaningless. Because as I'm sure you know, there are lots of accounting sleights of hand to make things look a little bit more attractive. Sticking options in, for instance, into your portfolio to boost your Sharpe ratio. Look, there's lots of stuff you can do. So you have to be very careful, very cautious. But I think realistically, the proof of the pudding, I think, is in the eating. So you want to beta test it. And if people are unwilling to give you free access for a period of time, then there's something wrong with that strategy.
I'll ask another question from the audience. How do you separate your ability to analyze risk on specific currencies or on a blockchain? What about exposure to third-party providers that might create a backdoor for theft? It feels like you have insights into kind of the inner workings of the ecosystem. Would you be able to, do risk analysis versus trying to chase opportunities as well?
Yes, absolutely. So that's a really interesting question. So yes, what you could do is you could, not that we have done, but what you could do is you could use the same parameters to look for anomalous data within trading data sets, basically within stock prices to see if there's any kind of manipulation or fraud. So yes, absolutely. Not something, not really something I'm an expert in, but it could be very easily repurposed for real risk management and real risk mitigation.
Fascinating. Because I'm just thinking through like the data that is being used currently or like when you can see some malfeasance kind of bubble up on various social channels and it just kind of starts snowballing, would you be able to be an early detector on that? Are you using any social kind of media data or conversational data for your analysis as well? Or is it more kind of on-chain transaction data?
No, not yet. So look, we looked at this initially and I think it's a very powerful tool, but effectively when we got to about 70% or 73% accuracy, we kind of thought, well, this is pretty awesome. Do we really want to add more vectors? So look, here's the funny thing. When we were doing this, we started off with 250 context vectors, and some of them were very, very damaging. So for instance, looking at copper prices, decrease the prediction to less than 50% on Bitcoin. Taking copper out and replacing it with silver was amazing. It increased it to above 70%. So it was a very, and we couldn't really understand why. It doesn't make a lot of sense. And what we found was actually it's a very iterative process. So that's, I think, the key component to this.
Gotcha. Well, I'm guessing if you switch it to Nickel, you're not going to get a good result at all this year. Because mess. But yeah. All right. Well, we're at the half hour and we try to do 15 minutes for the fireside chat. So thank you, Manu. We're going to do another We are going to do another breakout room as a friendly reminder. Networking, not pitching. So please be respectful, be kind to one another. And we don't do a participant list. So join our Telegram group is the best way to do it, or swap details in the room with somebody you want to connect with, you think you might be able to work with, whatever the case. Maybe.
I'll pop you into rooms in just a minute. You'll be in there for about 10 minutes or so with about 4 or 5 people. Don't be shy to stick around. You'll meet a bunch of other alternative investors. And Mihai, I will pop the Telegram group in the chat for you in just a second. So let me put you into rooms. I'll give you a question to talk about. Don't feel the pressure to chit-chat about it, but maybe digging a little bit deeper into the AI and ethics conundrum. Where do you think that we lay on that spectrum when it comes to crypto? I'll put you into rooms now. We'll see you back here in 10 minutes.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Manu, I forgot to warn you. Apologies. You're going to be proper put on the spot. We always ask the same question in between breakout rooms.
Sure.
Unmute yourself and predict the future. What do you see coming down? What are you really excited about in digital assets, or really anything that you're touching that you think is at the frontier? And bonus brownie points, whatever you want to call them, for something the audience hasn't heard about before.
Sorry, just in terms of my macro trends or specific
tokens? Whatever you're excited by, whatever you think that just something that is skittering across your brain at the moment.
Okay, so look, I think I'm a libertarian. I'm a big believer in privacy. I believe privacy is freedom. So I'm a very, very big fan of privacy coins. And I think we're probably, and look, you know, this is cyclical. I believe we're going to enter a new phase in the next 6 months where you're going to see probably privacy coins outperform. And obviously, big fan of Monero, a huge fan of another coin called Pirate Chain, which has got a symbol ARRR. Again, perhaps the most stupidly named project I've ever come across. I've told the dev team 100 times, change your name, you'll have so much more interest. But it's quantum encryption proof, and it's got one of the most secure communication networks that I've ever seen. It's very good. There's another one called Dero, which is effectively like a private version of Ethereum. So it's basically a third generation layer one blockchain, basically that runs smart contracts. And then the other one is one called Equilibria, which is effectively a private version of Chainlink and is less crap than Chainlink. So they're the ones I'm a big fan of right now. Cool. In terms of my market predictions, I mean, look, I think the US apparently went into a recession in Q2, although that's being disputed, and apparently Wikipedia has now changed the definition of recession. So no longer two negative quarters, but you know, what do I know, right? But I think what this basically means is that the people that are forecasting, you know, moves of US interest rates up to 5 or 6%, I don't know what these people smoke in the morning, but it's never going to happen. And the reason it's never going to happen is they and I love economists. I'm not an economist. I did a science, so you know, maybe I'm speaking out of school, but if you look at the average back in the 1980s, you know, Volcker hiked rates to 20% in the US. And they say, well, you know, if you look at the average over time, it's about 5%. It's like, it is. But the debt to GDP in the States back in 1980 was about 25% of what it is today. So 25 basis point hike today is the same as a 1% hike in 1980. So this is a real, and this is something that I don't think people really consider in terms of the impact it has, in terms of the cost of funding the operation that is the US government. So I would be not that surprised if we saw a bit of a U-turn and we saw a bit of a change in direction in September in terms of the rate hikes. Because look, the reality is that, and again, I'm not an economist. If you Google what is inflation is an increase in money supply. An increase in prices is a second order effect of an increase in money supply, because you have more money chasing either the same or less goods and services. So that's already happened. You know, you increase the money supply by 40% over 2 years, you're going to see an increase in prices. Hiking rates by 100 basis points or 75 basis points is going to do absolutely nothing and not change anything. So I believe what we're probably going to see is we're going to see either a cessation of hikes or a cut as we go into a deeper recession across the world. You know, I think Europe is in a whole world of trouble. Come winter, they will be going into recession as well. So that's not great from a macro perspective, but from an interest rate perspective, it's brilliant, because it will add more fuel to the fire and it will help propel, I think, Bitcoin ETH significantly higher as we get into the back end of the year. So September, December, I'm pretty bullish.
Still very early. Love it. All right. So up we go with the, Tim, how do I meet you? up we go. up we go. Inflation going to go up, which totally makes sense. And then you're expecting the long awaited promise of Bitcoin ETH, which is an inflation hedge, to come to reality. Well, I like your optimism. Isla, you want to talk breakout rooms?
Yep. We'll do the same thing again. Just different people. And it, why don't we continue on that thread about inflation and recession? What do you guys think? 2 quarters still a recession, or 2 quarters negative GDP is not a recession in 2022? I'll put you into rooms now, and we'll see you back here in 10 minutes.
All right. Let me get the official background back up. We're going to do a quick wrap up and then let you out of here. Well, now. But this is the weekly event. Next week, we're talking about an altcoin accelerators, or one in particular. Altcoins are very interesting for a number of reasons. Reminder, August 17th in Chi-Town is the Diffuse Tap in person. I will be there, so you'll get a chance to meet me in person. If that's a draw, if not, just let me know and I won't show up. And then Telegram, feel free to join the group, introduce yourself, ask for something. Isla?
That is it. I think we have reached the end of today and we look forward to seeing you next time. But thank you so much, Manu, for sharing your wisdom on all things AI. It might be helpful for you to drop your contact details into the Telegram group so folks can get in touch with you.
Sure, no problem. Thanks so much for having me on, guys.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thank you for showing. And thank you everybody for in the audience for coming and networking and all of that jazz. And we'll see you same time next week.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, everyone. Cheers. Take care.
Have a good one. Bye. Have a good one. Cheers. Bye. That's all, folks. Hope you learned something new. If you join us on Zoom every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Central, you can also network with other fascinating alternative investors from all over the world in small groups of 4 or 5. Learn more on our website at www.diffusefunds.com. Until next time.